given in direct voice by a communicator who gave his name as Ted Butler. Ted Butler was killed in a street accident in Leeds.
My name is Edward Tate.
Tate. And what's your surname?
Pardon?
What is your surname?
Oh, my surname. Yes. My name is Edward Butler, Ted Butler. Yes. I've been here now quite a few years now. I came here, 1923, I think it was. Yes, it must have been 1923. Yes, it was, 1923. That's a good few years ago now, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. I didn't have much time for this sort of thing. In fact, I didn't really know anything about it. My old woman, she was inclined to this sort of thing, but I didn't take too much notice. I just, well, discarded it as a lot of old woman's talk, you know. She used to go to meetings occasionally. Used to sometimes tell me bits and pieces. I said, lot of rubbish. Here I am, myself, talking to you from here. So I'm placed in the position, you might say, of having to accept the fact whether I want to or not. I must admit, I'm very glad to be able to. I'm very happy. I can't understand why now. Of course, people don't all realise this, and why there's any prejudice about it, I haven't any idea, because it's the most natural thing to live after what you call death, you know.
Mr. Butler, can you tell us how you crossed over and how you found yourself?
Oh yes, I was killed in an accident. I was crossing the High Street on a Saturday. Well, I always remember, I've been out doing a bit of shopping, and I was across the road, and before you knew Jack Robinson, something hit me. It was some lorry that I think got out of control or something down the slope. Anyway, got me pinned up against the wall. I was out anyway. I just remember something coming towards me, and that's all. Mm-hmm. All happens so sudden, you know. I'm no sort of, well, I suppose it's as well not to dwell on those things, you know. I have an old girl, she naturally at the time was in a proper state. She got married again some few years after. I don't blame her, why shouldn't she? I mean, there's not much point. She was not quite, well, she was about 53 or 54, I think she was, May once.
But how did you actually find yourself? I mean, how did you actually find
sort of
conditions?
Well, I don't know. All I know is that I saw a crowd of people all standing, looking down at something, and I had a look with the crowd, and I looked and saw someone who looked exactly like me. I thought, well, at first I didn't realize it was me. I thought, well, that's a coincidence. That kind of looks the same as I do, exactly the same. Might be a twin brother. It was me, of course. I didn't get cotton on at the time. And then I realized that my wife, who was there crying her eyes out, of course, she didn't seem to realize I was standing beside her. She was making such a fuss, and how did you do, of course, which was all very natural, I suppose, naturally, but she didn't seem to know I was there. I thought, well, this is the right to do, this is. And anyway, I put the body in the ambulance, you know, the wife got in, and some nurse or some woman was there, she must have been a nurse, and I actually got in with a wife who sat in this ambulance seat, and she didn't seem to realize I was sitting there at all. And gradually it came on me that was me lying down there, and I was sitting there as right as rain, you might say, but the wife didn't seem to have gotten on to the fact I was there, and I went to the hospital, and then of course they put me in a mortuary, and I didn't like that at all. I didn't fancy that, so I got out of that quick and went home. Her wife was Mrs. Kitchen next door, and trying to comfort her, you know. Mm-hmm. Oh dear, it was a time. I think that was the worst time of the lot, the first week, I suppose it must have been. Then there was a funeral and all that, of course I went to that. And I thought to myself at the time, well, I don't know, it was all this fuss and how'd you do and expense for nothing, because here I was in the carriage, an horse-drawn carriage the wife had, because she knew my love of horses, they did have motors, but she wanted this horse-drawn, I suppose. And I thought it was all very touching, but at the same time it all seemed so damn silly to me, because there I was. Nobody took any notice, the old parson, I knew him of old, not that I had anything with him, no interest in church or anything, but when we had our first kid christened, we went there. We were married years before that in another district anyway. Oh, well, he was standing there reciting away, you know, and I thought, well, I don't know, he should know if anyone knows. So I went and stood beside him and kept nudging him with my elbow in the side and take a notice at all. Just went on with his ritual, you know. Then he sort of spoke to the missus and one or two friends and neighbours and that, but after he was all out of it and lifted up his old skirts and off he went, he couldn't care less. Expect he got his little bit. Then there was the grave diggers, I knew one of them, old Tom Corbett, he was a case, he was, you had many a pint for them and a loud. He filled in the, you know, the other bloke filled in the old coffin, the old grave. I thought, this is a fine age you do, I'm not staying down here with this last time, I'll get out of there. I didn't quite know what to do. In a proper sort of thing, I must have hung around my house for weeks, I think.
Go on.
You know, once or twice, I would go on the old trams, and first I was sort of all mixed up. I used to have a laugh too sometimes. I used to think, oh, the corporation, do I sit on here not paying me fair? They'd say something. But then again, I began to realise that everybody sitting on that tram, for instance, wasn't paying the fare either. Some of them had got away with it for years, one way and another. Then, of course, there's one or two there that I met. I remember one of the first real conversations I ever had was with a woman sitting next to me on a tram. And I thought she seemed very sort of nice and that, and she started our conversation. So I remember she says something to me, she says, what are you doing here? I thought it was a fine way to open up a conversation. I said, what do you mean, what am I doing here? I might as well be here as anywhere else if I want to be. And she says, I know, I suppose, but you ought to be doing something, not just going up and down in trams and buses and going worrying your wife, you can't do anything that way. So I said, well, I said, it's all very well for you, I said, but where do you go then? Of course, I realised then that she was dead, you know. I thought, well, what's she doing on the same lark as me? If she's dead, she's dead. What, you know, I said, well, she said, as a matter of fact, she says, I've been coming up and down on the trams and the buses with you for some time. Well, you probably never noticed me until just now. She says, well, I've been here waiting for a chance to try and give you a hand. I said, well, what can you do? So she says, well, don't you think it's time you got away and got out of these here conditions? It's only your thoughts that's holding you down. You want to do more than this, surely, hanging around the earth. Nobody takes any notice of you. What's the point of it? So I said, well, some sense in that. It's true, no one takes any notice, but I find it's better than sort of just sort of, well, not bothering at all. And in any case, I said, I don't know of anything else. So she said, well, that's your fault, and it's your state of mind that keeps you down here. If you was to release your thoughts, she says, and think about things of a higher thought and nature, you'd get away from all this. She said, of course, I understand it's partly due to the way you pass, the suddenness of it, and the thoughts, vibrations, as she called it, and of your mother, your wife and mother and one or two other people holds you down, and she says, but you ought to get away from all this. all this. She says, you come with me. So I says, well, where are we going? So she says, oh, I'll take you, don't you worry. So I says, well, shall we get off at the next stop? She says, what do you mean get off at the next stop? It's not necessary to wait and get off at the next stop. We can get off whenever we want to. Once you've made up your mind you want to get away from things. So I says, well, I don't understand that. So she says, you should know by now, she says, that although you can get in the bus, for instance, and sit in the bus and get off at the stop and get on at the pick-it-up place and all that, you don't have to be like that. You don't have to do what everybody else does. You're only doing things out of habit. She says, you've got to get out of some of those habits and realize now that these things are important, and you can, by the mere thought, you can transmit yourself, transfer yourself, as it transfer yourself from this condition. So I said, well, I don't know. She said, look, she says, here's my hand, you hold my hand, just close your eyes and try not to think of anything in particular. Just make your mind a sort of blank, but don't think of anything material anyway. So I did as she told me. I found it a bit hard. I don't know how long we must have been on that bus before we got off it, but still, that's either here or there, is it? Anyway, next thing I knew, it was as if I must have lost consciousness or something. Next thing I knew, I was sitting in a very nice armchair opposite this lady, in a very nice little parlour, nice little room it was, you know, very pretty, very nice chintz curtains it was at the windows, there was a nice hearthrug on the floor, and although there was a wonderful feeling of lightness and warmth, what I thought was the sun, the shutters and the windows, everything looked spick and span, the table was nicely laid out, and all this everything where one would want. It was just like as if I'd gone somewhere for afternoon tea, you know. I thought, well, I don't know, where am I now? The place wasn't familiar to me, although it was very nice. So she said, oh, I brought you here. She said, you'll realise now, she says, you're in my little home. I said, well, that's very nice. I don't know what my wife would think, sitting in a strange woman's home. So she said, ah, she laughed. She said, she doesn't think like that now. She said, that's far away from you. She says, now, we'll have a nice chat, a nice cup of tea, and I'll explain things to you. So I said, well, that's very nice of you, dear. She said, oh, by the way, she says, I'd like you to know, she said, that I've been here for many years. I came here just at the turn of the century. So I said, oh yes. She says, I had a seizure, she says, and I fell down beside the kitchen table. I always remember myself how it happened, and I must have fallen to unconsciousness, she said, but my dear mother came and fetched me away. Anyway, she says, I'm very happy here, and I'm living with my mother. So I said, oh, are you? I says, oh, where's your mother now then? Oh, she says, she's out. Oh, yes, I says, well, how does she go to work? So she says, she laughs. She says, well, yes, I suppose you could call it work, but not work in the old way. My mother was a hard-working woman on earth, you know. She used to take in washing for people, and she was always doing something or other. But now she's very busy. She goes to a place where she looks after the children. She was always fond of the children, and these children, little children who died in infancy or when they were very young, you know, and she helps to bring them up and help them, look after them, you know, she loves that work. She'll be back soon. So she says, we'll have a cup of tea. I thought, well, this is nice. I thought, well, that's funny. I wonder if I'm going to taste it, because when I used to go from, you know, to my wife's place or some place, and they're having a cup of tea, I used to think, oh, I'd like a cup of tea, but of course I couldn't pick up the cups, you see, and you know, I suppose I wouldn't have tasted it. But she said, oh, you will here. She said, here, yeah, because you're in an entirely different atmosphere. She says, you're in your natural conditions now, so everything around you will be real and natural. Now, she says, you put out your hand, and she says, you'll feel things real. But like when he was going back to your wife and other places, things didn't seem to have any sort of reality. She says, here you go. She says, you have this cup of tea, dear, and you'll taste it. It'll taste just the same as tea you have on Earth. So I tasted it, it was. And she says, well, isn't that nice? I says, yes, it's very nice. She says, but who'd have thought? I said, I couldn't help laugh. And I said, well, who'd have think that people on Earth would think of us sitting up here having cups of tea? They think we were crazy, you know. She said, well, of course, that's the point. She says, people just don't understand. She says, here, she says, according to how you sort of got on, as she put it, she says, and as you progress, she says, so you find things there for your needs. If when you first come, you feel it's necessary to have this or that, it's provided for. But it's only a sort of temporary thing until you've adjusted yourself to the fact that you don't need those things, she says. Now, she said, I don't normally, she says, now, she says, have tea. Or ending like that, she says, but since you were a guest in my house and you're getting gradually accustomed to things, I thought it would help you to be able to make it as natural as possible. She said, but it's only for your benefit, I said, that's very nice, so you should have gone to trouble. She said, oh no, she says, the trouble is part of my work. I said, work? So she says, oh yes, she says, I make habit, she says, of going down to Earth. And if I can help someone, it's like you was, earthbound. I says, what did you say? Earthbound, she says. I said, earthbound. She says, yes, that's what you was, poor dear. She says, you was tied down to the earth because of your state of mind and your thoughts. You couldn't release yourself. And that's the part of my job, to help people release themselves from material things. So she said, I was able to do that. She said, I travelled up and down on that there bus, she says, and on that tram, she says, many a time with people, because I used to live in that town years ago. So I said, oh, did you? She says, yes, she says, I made it a sort of habit, she said, to go back myself in the early stages, the early years, to say back to the town, she says, and of course, there were many people I knew there, and I thought it would be a wonderful thing if I could help those people, especially those who really needed help from that place, you see, so I'm doing my little bit. She says, thousands and thousands of people do that, you know, and I'm only one of them.
Very interesting.
Yes, oh, well, of course, funny thing is, I wasn't really a native of that place. I went there, I suppose, I must have been about 19 to work in a factory there. Many years in Leeds, I was still born there. Oh, it was many years ago now.
What's it like on your side, Ben?
Hey?
What's it like on your side?
Oh, well, depends on what you're looking at, because there's so many diversities of places and conditions, you might say, that I could describe so many different conditions, and I suppose other people would describe something else, which in a sense is rather different. But in the main, I suppose, if you jump, put it all together, if you could do such a thing, you might say you've got every aspect of scenery and condition of life that you could associate with Earth. I mean, I don't know, I suppose it's like all the beauty of the world, your world, without any of the irritations and the snags and things. There's gorgeous places, lakes and forests and trees and birds, flowers, and beautiful light, and not harsh, it's a soft and yet beautiful light. It's not, I first of all wondered if it was due to the sun, but I was told since it had to do with the sun at all. It's an illumination that is of natural being, but what its source of it is, I really never discovered. Heavenly is something vastly different to the earth, where you're dependent on the sun and the moon and the stars. We're not dependent on those. It's a world which is so far removed, you might say, from the old idea of things in some senses. And these laws which affect us all here are so natural in themselves that there's no injustice. There's a perfect realization, you might say, of things which somehow changes us all gradually, but we live in a harmonious state of being that is so beautiful, because there is no ill will, no bad thinking, course, there are of those fears, I suppose. As I say, it's all a matter of how far you've gone and what you've achieved. But of course, after a time when I got settled down, I did go back a few odd times to the wife. She got married again. I didn't blame her for that. But I don't know, it seemed as if the old earth didn't mean the same to me. I went once or twice to places and met or went to see people, but of course nobody understood. I went once or twice to a spiritualist place where the wife used to go. She used to talk to me about a little place down a cut it was. But I didn't think too much to it. I went up the old stairs in this room where they had it. One or two people there that I recognised, but I once got a message over of sorts, but I don't think I was very good at it. It's all very interesting, you know. You were lucky, you two are, because you made some, well, I learned a bit, a lot of experience. Of course, you're bound to come up against some awkward customers. I should imagine the most difficult ones are the religious ones, because they've got so much sort of fixed in their minds and take out of a lot of shifting, I should think. Give me the man whose mind's open and is not cluttered up with a lot of ideas, because I realise now so much more. I often think if only I'd understood this, I wouldn't have been running around, travelling around in buses and trams and worrying myself as I was at times, silly you might say, all because I was ignorant. You know, that's the trouble with the world, ignorance. If only people weren't ignorant of this here truth, you know, of life and what happens at death, make a vast difference to an untold number of people in every shape and form, because not only would it make a big difference to the people that come over, but also a big difference to the people who are left behind. I think then one would see things differently and they'd understand more, and it would change them, it would make different new people of them. Bring down all these here daft barriers people have got about colour and religion and class and all that nonsense. Oh, it's, I don't know, I've heard of utopia as they call it, but on earth. Well, I suppose if there is such a thing as utopia, this is it. Because believe me, it really is a world in which there's a full life in every sense. There's no feeling of ill will of any kind. Everyone gets on fine and we're all in harmony and there's great peace and opportunities to do all the things you want to do, all the interests you want. It's a wonderful thing, you know, wonderful. I only wish I could convince everyone make a vast difference to them all. Believe me, what I think you two are marvellous. The way you go around and the way you try to work and help people and show them the truth, I think you two are highly to be thought of. I do really. I heard about you from a friend of mine, as a matter of fact, who does rescue work, and he says you want to go and sometime try and get in touch with that Mr. Woods and Mrs. Green, because they really are doing a good job, not like some of these other people that, well, I won't say, it's not for me to condemn Mrs., but you're doing a wonderful job, bless you both. Anyway, I can't hold on, because I'm not so good at this. I've been two or three times, but I must say, it's the first time I've ever had a real talk. Anyway, God bless you both.
Thank you for coming. Good work,
and don't get down in the dumps. You can't please everyone. Bound to get some brickbats, you know. You're a good couple. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much.
We let him come because we thought that he would be an illustration of a kind that would interest and appeal to many. He's just an ordinary humdrum, you might say, individual when on your side, but whose reaction to life here is remarkable. He's progressed, of course, especially from the time in which he spoke when he first came over. It is true, there are many people who do cling to the earth and do carry on sometimes for a very long time doing a bit of self. thing as they would have done when on Earth, travelling in buses and on trains, going to theatres and cinemas, visiting homes, people they used to know, all sorts of mundane things which hold them because it's the only thing that they seem to be able to understand or appreciate, in spite of the fact that they're completely ignored. You see, until a person's mind is changed and their outlook, it's very difficult for them to be released always from material things. Of course, a large number of people do leave the earth immediately at death. But there are people who, for various reasons, are held back by material thoughts, by conditions, or smell of things. That's why, if only this truth were understood and accepted, it could save a great deal of unhappiness, and many people could see early on, after their passing, the truth and the realization of life. It would mean less work for many of us here who come to help them and bring them away from earth conditions. Indeed, one might go on and say that how tragic it is that in life very few people know in your world about the realities of the spirit. They know so little about life itself. They're so concerned with existing materially that they know nothing or little of things of vital importance. They know nothing of the things of the spirit, the real life, that is the life of continuity, a life that never ceases. Instead of building for the things that are perfect, so many build for the things of the material which have their moment and are gone. I only wish it were possible for so many other souls that we have in mind to come and talk to you. No doubt some of them will. We want to bring you a varied group of entities, peoples, so that you shall have a very good cross-section of humanity and their reactions to life here, because we do know that you make full use of your recordings, and that gives us great pleasure. It's a great joy for us to come to you, because we feel that we are achieving something. We feel that we are not, in a sense, wasting our time, which so often we have done and do with others. I know it is an important thing to give the personal proof and the evidence and the comfort of the individual, but so many people, once they receive that, do nothing else. They don't do anything to forward the truth and to help others. You are doing a real work, and it's a great pleasure and a great joy to come to you. It's been very nice this morning, particularly because I feel that in letting our friend through, we've probably introduced an interesting character, an interesting experience for many. And I know you make full use of it.
We can make full use of it.
My blessing is the best of you.
Dr. Marsh, can you hold on a minute?
I will, yes.
Can you give me any idea of who I can take your information about the cancer cure to? Because I'm so anxious to help your wife over this as well.
I appreciate you.
Can you give me any idea who I could take it to who would be interested?
I don't think I could, for the simple reason that I don't think anyone was going to be interested who might be able to help. They weren't interested during my earthly lifetime. They would not listen, have no interest shown whatsoever. I think it's less likely even now. I know everyone is very anxious to help in this respect, but we can only hope and pray. We are endeavouring to assist in any way we can, but I'm afraid I cannot give you any names or who to go to. I think it would be a fruitless effort on your part, but I appreciate the kindness and the thought. Thank you, my dear. I must go. Goodbye.
The second speaker that you heard from the World of Spirit was a guide to the circle, Dr. Marshall. Dr. Marshall, when on Earth, lived at Southend-on-Sea and passed into the spirit world, I do not know quite when, but not so very long ago. I wrote to Mrs. Marshall regarding the cancer cure, asking if I could help her to place this valuable information in the right quarter. But this has gone to Scotland, so she told me. And when it came back to her, if they had done nothing with it, then I would be given the opportunity to see what I could do. But Mrs. Marshall also passed on about a fortnight or 3 weeks after that. And so this cancer cure, which was known when Dr. Marshall was on Earth, has not been brought into being as a helpful cure for those who suffer from cancer.